welcome to the Earfluence Podcast, which is a podcast about podcasting from a podcast production company. I'm your host, Jason Gillikin, CEO of Earfluence, and with me as always is our lovely co-host, Cece Huffman, Swiss Army knife at Earfluence, doer of all things, graphic design, producing, content writing, everything else. Cece, what's happening today?
We've got a bunch of just random things happening today. I'm grateful for December because everything slows down a little bit, but it makes your days a little bit more different. So you're giving a presentation later, so I get to do some PowerPoint work, and then a little call with someone, and then this recording, and then some videos. I don't know. That's on the agenda for this afternoon.
Well, I am grateful that you know how to do PowerPoint, and I don't have to do that PowerPoint. So I very much appreciate it.
Yeah, I like doing it, so it's okay.
And we've got a guest coming on today, Cece. Her name is Lauren Pacell. She is the owner of Tink Media, and she specializes in out-of-the-box marketing strategies for podcasts. So I want to tee you up with a question on what is the weirdest, strangest, craziest method that you've seen a podcast marketed?
All right. I think I have an answer to this one. And I think it might be a little bit self-serving, but, and I want to reiterate that you asked me yesterday to make sure I knew to answer this question, and then this morning. So I know that this is a very important answer. When we opened our studio at Raleigh Founded, we did a podcast marathon that was like 8 hours long, like an entire workday where we had show after show after show to let people know, hey, our studio is here. Come see it. And we're actually going to do that again in January too. And it's something that I've never seen anybody else do. And it works really well because you have so many people in and out all day long and so many different shows that you might catch the tail end of the one that you like and then realize that you like the next one too. And like, there's so, the audience overlap is so strong that you can really advertise for all shows and for yourself. But really, this was an ad to say that we're going to have a podcast marathon on January 19th at American Underground. So be sure to tune into that.
Wow, that was amazing. That was a crafty ad read there.
Thank you.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I'm very excited for expanding, setting up the new studio at American Underground in downtown Durham there. All right. So that I'm going to ask... we're going to ask Lauren that later on in the show, what's the craziest thing that she's seen for out-of-the-box marketing strategy. So I'm curious about her answer. So let's bring her into the show. So everybody, please welcome Lauren Pacell, founder of Tink Media, which offers out-of-the-box marketing and PR solutions for your podcast that can help you expand your audience and grow your numbers. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Jason, I was really impressed to hear you explain all the things that Cece does, like video, like, and also I have to note, I don't know if your listeners know this, there seems to be a guitar behind Cece.
Yeah. What can I say? I wear many hats.
That's not fair. You're good at too many things. Yes. No, I'm really excited to be here. I like this show and I have a lot of enthusiasm, more than most people do, about marketing and podcast marketing specifically.
So. Awesome. Well, we get that question all the time, actually, on Zooms. Cece, with clients, everybody will be like, Cece, do you play guitar? Yeah. And every now and then she's like, nah, just a decoration.
But yeah, well, at a certain point, I'm just like, I don't feel like explaining this conversation anymore.
Yeah. Cece, I need to throw you a question real quick.
Yes.
And that is, any guesses why Lauren's company's name is named Tink Media?
Tink makes me think of Tinkerbell, and her hair's blonde and it's in a bun. And so that's where I would pull that from.
You are correct. There is more to this story. So Lauren, I looked her up. She is an elite half marathon runner and won a race in Disney World as Tinkerbell. So she dressed up as Tinkerbell and won a race, and has been in the Boston Marathon a few times. Lauren, am I right on this? Did I find the right person here?
I can't believe you found that. Yes, I was actually training for another Disney race and a marathon, and I had a little hairline fracture on my, or a stress fracture on my hip. And I was walking around New York in the morning on an icy road and I fell and I broke my hip. And it was emergency surgery. It was so bad. And the doctor told me, you're probably never going to be able to run as fast as you do now. And I was like, I will show you. And 1 year later, I won the Disney Princess Half Marathon. And they were really happy because usually it's like, you know, world-class runners win that race in those weird runner outfits. Everyone was just very happy that someone dressed up as a Disney yeah. character actually won. So that is my, like, that story means a lot to me. Tinkerbell means a lot to me. She's kind of bitchy, but also magical, you know? And mm-hmm. Anyway, so that is exactly why I can't believe you found that about the running, but yeah, that really is why I chose the name.
That is awesome. I mean, I'm always so impressed by you elite runners like that. I like to run. I'm not elite at all. I'm a slow runner, but I enjoy it. I tried to dress up this past weekend. My 9-year-old daughter is involved in Girls on the Run, and her first 5K. So it's in December, right? And she's running with this group, and there's a parent or somebody that has to run with her. And so I'm like, yes, I would love to do that. I'm going to dress up in my elf costume because it's, you know, it's in December. And she was mortified. She is like, absolutely not. No way. You are not doing that. If you plan on doing that, mommy's running. I'm like, all right. So I couldn't dress up.
I would love for you to dress up and run along with me. That would be an honor. Oh my gosh.
It sounds great, except like you'd be running twice as fast as me. Like you're a 5-minute runner. I'm a 9-minute runner. So I don't think so. we can line up together at the start of the race. Cool. And then high five. I'll high five you as I'm going past you after you've been there at the finish line for like the last 2 hours.
I haven't raced in a while, but I do love running. I think it just the time by yourself outside. Like I do a lot of slow runs. I think it's the best thing. Like when I go on a vacation, the first thing I do to understand the place is going to run. So I'm not really racing so much anymore, but I still love the sport.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. And it's a great time to listen to podcasts.
Yeah. And I think it's awesome. Your daughter is getting into it so young. Cause I can remember, I'm like going way off topic, but I can remember my dad said when I was in 7th grade, he was like, my dad's a marathon, multi marathoner. And he said, I want you to try the cross country team. And I remember I said, okay, I'll join the team, but I'm quitting if I don't like it. And I'm not going to any of the meets. And I remember thinking like, I did not talk to my dad that way. No. And I remember thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen to me that I just, and my dad just went, all right, we'll see. If you like it. And then I was good at it. And so when you're good at things, you like them. So right. Anyway.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's how Tink Media formed, or that's a name anyway for Tink Media. Mm-hmm. And audience, thank you for putting up with us for the past few minutes here on the running topic. But let's get to marketing, why you're here. So Lauren, when we connected about coming on the show, you said, podcasts hire me to help get their numbers up. My mission with everything I do is to inspire people to market their shows. They do have the power to do this. It is all about relationships. I would like to talk about promo swaps, how to spend money, where not to waste time, and how to get featured on apps. So I'm excited for this because that is exactly what every podcaster is looking for. So let's start here. Tell us your why for founding Tink Media and being involved in podcasting.
Well, Tink Media started out a lot differently. I used to work in book publishing, and while I wasn't even on the PR team, but while I was there, the PR team knew I loved podcasts. So they would say, hey, Lauren, can you get David Sedaris on a podcast? And I was like, yes, please. Like that, you know, what I realized was people, PR teams weren't really good at working with podcasters. They don't understand podcasts. They don't know what podcasts are out there. They don't know how to communicate with podcasts and stuff like that. So I actually left that job to start Tink, where the original mission was to get authors, which that was the world I knew at the time, on podcasts to talk about their books. But the more and more I started talking to podcasters, the more I started realizing, oh, no one is able to help with marketing. And, you know, I do believe like it's really hard for podcasters who are editing and doing all of the creative work to then put on this totally other hat. And everyone in podcasting is wearing 10 million hats already. But like, So I do know that it's really, really hard to have that ask where you're making and marketing. But what I want everyone to know is that, you know, marketing is so old. Everyone knows it's important. It's been around forever. It's nothing new, but you put the word podcasting in front of it and suddenly people get really confused. And mm-hmm. it's really, really necessary. And it's not like a nice to have anymore. It's a must have. But the best exciting thing, most exciting thing to me is that there's so many things you can do that don't cost money and that are natural fits to your show. And I did a tweet thread. I did 100 days of tweeting for this 100 tweet campaign. And I did 100 podcast marketing tips in this Twitter thread. And when I started, I literally said, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. Let's see what happens. And I could do 100 more. There's so many tiny things. And I think they're almost all based on relationships, which is why I love this job, because podcasters are great. And so it's all about finding your people and figuring out how to work with them. So I always say it's like, when I have a client, it's like I'm setting my client's show up on play dates and I'm saying, who should they play with and what should they do together?
That's amazing. And first of all, I love that it's not a nice to have, it's a must have right now. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. But what do you mean by that it's all about relationships? Like, to market your podcast, you know, there's a Facebook strategy that you could have, right? Where it's not about relationships there. You could simply pay money for the ads and that's that. You could simply pay money for Spotify ads and that's that. But you're saying it's all about relationships. So what do you mean by that?
Well, yeah, I think you could buy an ad and anyone can do that. And that really isn't relationship based. But I think the most meaningful things are based on relationships. So that's finding out where are your audiences? What other shows are they listening to? Who are the people that you admire and want to spotlight? And, you know, who do you see your podcast working with? And then seeing, you know, getting to know them, appreciating the work that they do and seeing how you can work together. And So when I get a client, my favorite thing is I sit down and I make a big list of the friends, you know, the people I want to be my podcast friends. And then I write in another column, how do I want to work with this person? And then I send out a personal note and I say, hey, you know, we have some similar things going on here. We have some audience overlap. You know, I do research on this to make sure, but I kind of have an open door policy too. I don't want to just say, let's do a promo swap or let's do a guest swap. Because if you ask questions, you find out what they have going on and you might learn something new. Like, I have booked my clients on panels just because I said, hey, what do you have coming up? Or what do you need? You know, you shouldn't just be asking for something when you reach out to podcasters. You should give them something in return. So it's, you know, can you be on my show? Can I be on your show? Do you want to do a promo swap? Do you want to do a social media swap? Do you want to do a newsletter swap? And even if you don't figure out something in that first meeting, the seeds have been planted. You now have a new friend. Your Rolodex just got bigger. You know, I just think that that is how those more meaningful personal conversations lead in the end, maybe not right away, maybe no silver bullet, and maybe there is no silver bullet, but those will lead to growth in long term. And I think it's necessary for having a healthy marketing plan is these ongoing relationships with people.
I think it's also really interesting that, like, you heard our episode with Arielle because you know Arielle, and the whole reason you're here is because you know her and we reached out to her. So, like, that's, I mean, a prime example of exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And podcasting is a relatively small world right now.
Yeah.
So it works to do that. You know, someone I'm working with who works for Tink, I saw that she tweeted, I think she followed Arielle and that's how I started following her. And she tweeted, I wish someone would pay me to write about podcasts. And I DM'd her and said, I can't pay you to write about podcasts, but I think you might be able to work with me, you know, like, so it's all connected.
It really is. So when you're first starting out with a client, then that means a podcast client that's coming to you and saying, hey, I need some help marketing my podcast, right? Or I'm an author and I need some help marketing my book. And then you're reaching out then to podcasts or podcasters or people in the podcast space and just asking them questions about what they need. I mean, it sounds so simple, yet I don't think most podcasters are doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work because one pitch letter should take 15 to 20 minutes if you want it done really well. It takes research. And it's not always like, what do you have going on? I always give a suggestion for how to work together just so they're not like, I don't know, what do I have going on? Like my mom is coming over this weekend, you know, like I do give a specific idea of how I see us working together, but I also want to know what they have in mind. I want them to respond to that email. I want to get their attention because I feel like once I have a back and forth, I can charm them with my ideas and we can, mm-hmm. we can work and I can convince them that would help them to work. It would behoove them to work with me. Yeah. It's not just, you know, podcasters, influencers in the space. You know, if you can get a good relationship, like we email Stitcher sometimes and help them, you know, request that our shows get featured in carousels, or we even request types of carousels, or something that we really believe in is newsletters. I think you asked me what not to waste your time doing.
Hold on to and Stitcher, hold on to the newsletters. But one thing I see as a weakness in podcast PR right now is that there's not a true attempt at building a relationship, right? And it sounds like you're approaching it differently. So we'll get a lot of pitches for podcast guests. And you can tell that it's a really canned pitch. You know, maybe they'll mention specifically that they want to be on one of our podcasts, but more often than not, they will email me and say, I love your podcast and would like to have somebody, you know, I would like to have Matt Smith on this podcast because he can talk about this, this, and this. And like hear all his accolades in the whole TLDR format, right? And it's like, okay, well, you clearly didn't listen to our podcast. You didn't mention anything about that. I don't even know what podcast you're talking about because we are literally producing 19 podcasts right now. And I just have no idea which one you're talking about. I didn't really see what was in it for me. Like I didn't see, you know, any attempt at relationship building. And so like, it sounds like you're approaching things in a much more relationship driven, not just one-off conversation. I'm going to get this person on a podcast and boom, I'm done with my task for the day. You're thinking about this from a much longer term solution, you know, much longer term play, I guess.
Yeah. And that's why I say you should spend 15 to 20 minutes. People don't want to hear that. But if you really did, then you'd only be reaching out to people in a meaningful way. And if you're not, then don't even do it.
People can tell when it's not. Like, it's so clear.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. You mentioned that a lot of podcasters are wasting time in, you know, trying to market their shows. So then what have you seen as one of, if not the biggest waste of time that you're seeing and biggest mistakes that podcasters are making in marketing?
The biggest mistake people make marketing their podcast is on social media. It's great to have social media handles for your show. It's great for the audience you already have. It's not going to get you a new audience. And people generally don't go from platform to platform, so they're not going to download your episode based on a tweet they saw. I think what I witness is a lot of people thinking, I worked on marketing all day. I was on Twitter all day. And it's like, no, you were playing around with Twitter. You were not marketing. If I could spend, I mean, you just get a lot more bang out of your buck doing other things. I'm sure if you spent all day on Twitter, you might get some more followers eventually. But if I could take, like, pull some of people's time away from social media and push it onto newsletters or something else, I would. So I just think people should kind of have the presence. Having it look good is actually more important, so that when people go to that page, there's nice things to look at. All of the information is there. You know, get a link tree or a pod link so that they can find the podcast very, very, very easily. But constant conversation is not necessary.
Okay. Okay. So are you saying then, yes, post the episodes or post whatever assets that you have for each episode on social media, but don't continually be on there trying to market it and don't expect a huge amount of growth within those platforms. Is that correct?
Yeah. And also, I'm sure if you're on podcast Twitter, you see all the time, someone will tweet podcast recommendations, and then it's just a flood of people with a link to their podcast. That doesn't work. No one, if I said podcast recommendations and someone, you know, tweeted a Star Wars podcast to me. I don't care about Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Like, why? You know, it would even make more sense if someone was like, I enjoy content that has to do with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And then if someone just says blandly they're looking for podcasts, you're not going to get anything out of that. And I know that people actually spend time just responding to those tweets all day. And it's a humongous waste of time. And it makes you look like a troll or something. It's not a good mm-hmm. look.
I've tried that in the past and did not get anywhere. And I'm glad you're saying that it is a waste of time, because I was hopeful. I was hopeful that it was a waste of
validating.
Time. I enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's always really relieved to hear that. Yeah. And you should just pick the one you like. You don't have to be on every single one. Pick the one you like and make the other ones look good. When I started Tink, I don't have a podcast, but I had an Instagram page and I really only had 9 images so that when people got there, they could see. And then I would do stuff in stories. But really, I just was like, I need the first nine blocks to look good. And that's it. That's all I worried about.
That's an interesting strategy. I wonder if we should do something like that, Cece, for some of our podcasts. Like if we're starting up a new show and just want to have some sort of Instagram presence that people can go to and just have those initial 9 blocks and not worry about it after that. And then just so people can refer to it. So anyway, that's an interesting idea, Lauren.
Yeah. And then you could, you know, now that you can link in stories, you could, you know, put out episodes and also ask people to tag you in their stories if they're listening. Like, take a screenshot if you're listening, and then you can share that on stories. Like, go nuts on stories and just have it look nice in those 9 blocks.
Yeah. Lauren, you mentioned newsletters. So I don't see a ton of podcasters leveraging newsletters. And yet, when I do sign up for some podcast newsletters, it seems to be pretty effective. Like, there's one, Julie Kratz, who has a diversity podcast, always get her newsletter. Megan, my wife, has a newsletter that goes out, and that's effective in driving people to her podcast. What are you seeing from newsletters, and why don't a lot of people take advantage of it?
Well, yes, I love newsletters. One reason it's so valuable for your podcast to have a newsletter, even if you're not putting content out, that's a very valuable audience to own. You don't own your Apple Podcast subscribers, but you own your newsletter list. So using that in the future for something, even if you're just doing a, here is the episode, people will click on that. People click on newsletter links more than they click on social media links. So even if you're just saying the episode is here, but also there's tons of fun stuff you can do. Newsletters are so much fun. Interviews, bonus content, bring your listeners in, give them shout outs. But really where I see newsletters helping podcasts isn't the podcaster having the newsletter. It's the podcaster reaching out to other people's newsletters and pitching themselves. So there's a number of podcast newsletters out there. I have one called Podcast the Newsletter. There's Earbuds. There's Podcast Gumbo. There's tons. Even if they're not completely discovery oriented, they usually have a little discovery section. So my advice is always subscribe to all of them. And I can share you a link with all of the ones I recommend people subscribe to and read them for a while before you pitch. Cause like you were saying, you don't want to get a pitch, you know, like I get really bad pitches for my newsletter and I think I don't want to hear about Star Wars. I don't mean to say bad things about Star Wars.
Yeah. You got a vendetta against Star Wars.
No, I have to get a new thing to make fun of. Yeah. So subscribe to these newsletters and read them, get to know them, get the tone, figure out if you're a good, you know, match, and also know what the newsletter writer is looking for. Like James Cridlin has a podcast newsletter called Pod News. He's looking for like the new tech trend, you know, trends in content or something really new and exciting or buzzy or something new that someone's doing or, you know, tech stuff. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for great new indie shows that no one else knows about. So like you have to also know what the person is looking for. But so every single campaign I get, a huge part of my outreach is newsletters. And it's not just podcast newsletters. It's just niche newsletters. You know, if I had a food podcast and there's a lot of food newsletters, and they might even be more likely to use my podcast recommendation because their whole newsletter is not made of podcasts, you know? So they might think, right. Wow, cool. I could like add a newsletter link for these people.
Yeah. So
that's a really good point.
Yeah, definitely. So how does somebody, what's the best strategy then for somebody to email you and to get in your newsletter? Like, because you get tons and tons of pitches from people that want to be featured, you know, all these independent podcasters that are out there, the hundreds of thousands or millions of them that could want to be on your newsletter. Like, how do you, what comes to the top of the pile for you?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the same rules for pitching me is the same as, you know, when I'm pitching a podcast to get my client on their podcast. But I really like it when, you know, when I see a press release, I'm kind of turned off. And I think this is kind of speaks to, you know, podcasting is a newer medium. And in the olden days, you know, they would have this fancy professional press release. And when I see that, the first thing I think is, oh, they sent this to 10 zillion people. I don't care.
Right.
And you saying it's all about relationships. I love the readers of my newsletter. And the last thing I say in every newsletter, every single one, is I love you. Cause I think if you've gotten this far, I do love you. Cause it's a very long newsletter. So right. I love these people. And so if one of them, if I can see that they've subscribed, and sometimes maybe if they've responded in the past and said, hey, thanks for this recommendation. And then I see an email from them, of course I'm going to open it. And if it's like a nice note, that's not too much of an ask, and they say, hey, I really like this recommendation that you made. Thank you. I mean, I'm one of those people that if you tell me that you like my dress, I'll do anything. Just be nice. Just be like a nice, normal person. But I also, if they know the kind of stuff I like, so if they've been reading, they know that I love the Donner Party and Disney World and the historical Jesus. So they're going to know, oh my gosh, I have an episode on this. This is perfect for you. So if they act like they know me. And I just heard a brilliant tip. We're doing these Twitter spaces in podcast Twitter about pitching to newsletters. And I think we're going to start having more of them. And we're also going to be having Twitter spaces for people to pitch their podcasts to newsletter writers, which I think will be really exciting. But someone on that Twitter thread said the best way to get noticed by a newsletter writer is don't just cold pitch them. Respond to the last email, the last newsletter they sent out. And that's brilliant because I do get a lot of pitches, but you know, this is the difference between pitching to someone with closed arms or open arms, because I get lots and lots of cold pitches, but when I send out my newsletter, I am watching the responses. So you're definitely going to get noticed, and it shows that they subscribe. It shows that they read. So I think that was one of the best newsletter pitching tips I could give.
That's awesome. Love it. And love your dress, by the way. It's amazing.
Go on.
So you teased earlier about, getting on Stitcher and Stitcher's carousel. And, you know, I'm super curious because it's not really something that we've dug into too much, on how to be featured on apps, whether that's new and noteworthy or news and noteworthy on Apple Podcasts, whether that's featured on Spotify, whether that's featured on Stitcher, on other apps. Like, what's the strategy there? Like, how do you do that? Because it's something that we haven't really dug into.
Well, I mean, there are Airtables for Stitcher and Apple Podcasts, and you can submit. And it's funny, when I first saw that Airtable, I thought, they're not reading this. They're just trying to placate us. But I found out they actually do check to see who's filling out this Airtable and giving their information. And, you know, it's in order to, you're proposing that you be featured in New and Noteworthy and other places. And what I have learned about that is if there is no silver bullet to getting your show to grow, if there is one, it's getting featured in Apple Podcasts, right? So that is something you should prioritize. And I have a reminder in my calendar to submit to Apple Podcasts like once a week. Like I have the reminder every week and sometimes I skip it, but like you should be doing it on a continuous basis. And also, here's how you need to think about it, especially for Apple Podcasts, but also Stitcher. They're trying to make their homepage look like a news feed. So they want the, think of it, what are you giving them for if someone's looking for a big guest or something newsworthy or something tied to a holiday, something really, really relevant, that's what they want their homepage to look like. So mm-hmm. how can you make your content look like that? You know, as I said, I submit often, but I make every single pitch a little bit different. And my advice is have a document where you're like, this is my Apple podcast submission document, and have all the links and everything that you'll need every time. So you can just grab it and pull it in and throw it in. But then on the title and the description, make everything else a little bit different.
Gotcha. And so are they looking for individual episodes then? Because you mentioned potentially like holiday themed episodes, or are they looking for entire podcasts?
Both. And you can indicate in the form, you can indicate where you want it to go. Another interesting thing is if you have something that could resonate with a foreign audience, you can choose, I want this to be on the Australian Apple Podcasts app. And you might have a better chance of getting featured because there's less people applying in Australia. So you can be really specific about what you're applying for.
Wow. Okay. Give us a success story. Like, what have you gotten featured on any of these apps?
Okay. Well, here's an example. This was just podcast therapy. This person, we have something called podcast therapy, which is consultation. And we were doing podcast therapy with a woman who has this show called Two Lives. And that wasn't even a full campaign, but afterwards I said, you know what, I'm going to submit your show to Apple Podcasts. And I just did it. It took 4 minutes and it got featured. And I can't really exactly say why. I think they are looking for interesting things. You know, there is a human going mm-hmm. through that, looking for interesting things. But yeah, it wasn't one that I had been doing all the time, you know? So I just say, you never know.
That's amazing. And I think there's a misconception that they're just looking for the bigger names to feature, right? They're looking for, you know, to put the new Dax Shepard podcast on there, or the new Obama podcast on there, or whatever it is. And of course, those are going to be on there, right? But they're looking for other things as well, and something that's different, something that's not celebrity based. That's amazing, Lauren. So this has been some amazing advice, you know, for marketing podcasts. And I mean, I appreciate it. Our audience is going to appreciate it. I've got to ask, and I started the podcast with asking Cece, what's the craziest, weirdest way that you've seen a podcast marketed? So what about you, Lauren? What's something that's way outside of the box that you've seen for podcast marketing?
I mean, I think the most genius thing ever done was Dan Pashman's Cascatelli. Do you know about this?
I don't.
Dan Pashman is the host of The Sporkful. It's a podcast for eaters, not foodies. It's like friendly food conversation. He actually, I mean, this is maybe a stretch when it comes to marketing, and I don't expect many shows to be able to do this, but you ask for the most wild one I've mm-hmm. heard of. And he started investigating, like, what is the best pasta shape? And he went to factories and interviewed Italian chefs and everything. And he spent many episodes going over it. And then he made the pasta shape. He went to a fat, he actually had it physically made, and now you can go buy it. It's real. And he was, by doing this, you know, he got press, you know, and he reached out to people and was on people's shows talking about this pasta shape and everything. So it was this perfect whirlwind of, it made sense for the show. People really, really loved it. They could buy the product. Everybody wanted to talk about how he went about even doing that. You know, so I feel like it hit, because marketing is so, it can get blurry, right? Is it PR? Is it, you know, awareness? So it's my favorite example of anything that anyone has ever done. It's the most creative solution. And what I think is, it really was marketing and content coming together in a perfect mm-hmm. way. And people keep on asking me what my predictions are in podcasting. And I think what I really hope to see is content and marketing coming together more. And that should feel really good. It shouldn't feel like you're, you know, shoehorning in marketing. It should just feel like you're making really good content that actually happens to make your show more marketable, or if you like to say it in a nicer way, more easier to work with other shows.
Right. I feel like the best types of ads, like the most effective types of ads, don't necessarily feel like they're an ad. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So Lauren, you're a business owner, you're a marketer. You probably have a million ideas bouncing around in your head at all times on how to take your business to the next level, how to take podcast marketing to the next level. What is one out of the box strategy that you've been dying to try out?
Well, one of my shows is called How to Do the Pot, and it's a cannabis show for women. So it's a very instructive, it's kind of, if you're kind of like a novice or a cannabis curious, you know, how does it affect your cycle? And, you know, really, really specific to women and non-binary people. She actually does something really smart, which is an example of what I was saying before about content and marketing. She has her regular episode out, which is a well-produced episode about edibles or cannabis or something like that. Then that same week, she'll put out another episode, which is called The First Time I Bought Legal Weed. And all it is someone in the podcasting space, a friend who sends in a 5-minute voice memo of telling the story of the first time they bought legal weed. And this is really brilliant because she was just doing it because she had too many people she wanted to interview and she couldn't fit them all on. So, but what ended up happening was she's providing great content. Those podcast episodes get just as many downloads as the other ones. People love them. But then when I came out as a marketer, it was really helpful for me because now I had collateral and I could say, hey, can Ellen be on your show? Because you can be on Ellen's show, you know? So it was really brilliant. But what I really want to do with her is, you know, stealing from Dan Pashman, I would like to make a strain of cannabis for podcasters and kind of map out everything that Dan has done with his pasta shape and, you know, get this cannabis strain out. And I'm not a cannabis expert, but Ellen is. So she would be the one figuring out what would need to go into that. But that would be my dream thing to do. And I'll let you know if that happens. It's a long shot.
I don't know that it's necessarily that much of a long shot. I mean, it seems like a brilliant marketing strategy there, mm-hmm. something that people would be excited about, something that could spread virally. I mean, can you imagine the press on all this stuff? You got to go with this. you got to try it.
All right. That's my New Year's resolution for next year, to get this going.
Yes. Awesome. Lauren, such amazing content. Do you have time for a couple fun questions?
Mm-hmm.
So you get pitched all the time from independent podcasters, people that are podcasters are not as well known. Give our audience a recommendation on a podcast that they probably don't know about that they should go listen to.
Yeah, Rumble Strip is a podcast. It's part of the Hub and Spoke Collective, and it's hosted by Erica Hellman. And it is just, she's a really good interviewer and storyteller. There's nothing like super fancy to it, but the stories are really touching. They kind of are all over the place. You know, there's not necessarily one sort of theme. There's some two-part episodes talking to lawyers about why they love their jobs as lawyers. Or there was a really amazing episode that was actually quite sad about talking to a mother whose son had taken his own life. So they're all over the place, emotional. She is, I can't explain it. She's such a good interviewer. It's basically her sitting down with someone in a microphone, and that's all there is. But this simpleness, she's so good at it. And I had never heard anyone talking about it. And I think I've heard of everything, right? And I just discovered it, and I had so much fun going back. So Rumble Strip, go look it up.
Awesome. We'll check it out. All right. What about a popular celebrity type of podcast? What's one of your favorites?
I don't know if this counts, but I want to give a shout out to This American Life. I feel like everybody has listened to This American Life, but, you know, you listen to This American Life in 2012, and then some other shiny new things come and you lose, you know, you This American Life drops off your priority list, right? Well, I still listen to This American Life every single week. It hasn't changed. It's still wonderful storytelling. I just introduced my mother to This American Life, which was one of the best things I've ever done for her, because and you have to go on your computer to listen to the very old episodes. So she's at her computer every day going through years and years of This American Life. So I know everyone's heard of it, but I want this to be a reminder that, like, you might not have listened to it in a while and you can go back. It's been there for you all along. Like, be faithful to This American Life.
That's amazing. Yeah, I feel the same way about how I built this, where there's always something to come back to, or there's always some other, like you said, shinier object to listen to. And then you come back and you're like, oh yeah, how I built this is always consistently amazing. And even if I'm looking at whoever the guest is in the industry, I'm like, I don't really care. I don't care that much about crypto. I don't really care about whatever. If you listen to it, you're hooked automatically. You're into it because
you're home.
Such a, oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. This American Life, what a great recommendation. Reminder, I should say, for everybody listening too. Well, Lauren, thank you for coming on the Earfluence podcast. How can our audience connect with you?
Well, I am LaurenPassell. That's my handle on Twitter and Instagram. And if you find me on Twitter, I think you'll be able to find links to my newsletters, which is Podcast the Newsletter, which is a recommendations newsletter. You can also find that newsletter at podcastthenewsletter.substack.com. And I also have a podcast marketing newsletter called Podcast Marketing Magic, and that's podcastmarketingmagic.substack.com. But Twitter is the best place to if you want to say hi and see what else I'm up to.
Awesome. Well, everybody, go subscribe to the newsletters. Go check out tinkmedia.co. That's the correct URL, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. Everybody, go check out tinkmedia.co. Connect with Lauren on Twitter. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the Earfluence podcast.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
All right, CC, I think we're good to go. Those were some good ideas, weren't they?
Definitely.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks for listening to the Earfluence podcast. If you're interested in podcast production, go visit earfluence.com. Check out all of our social media profiles where we're at Earfluence Media. For CC Huffman, I'm Jason Gilligan, and we'll see you next time on the Earfluence podcast.